everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Kashrus, presented by the Kashrus Awareness Project in conjunction with Torah Anytime. Today we are privileged to be joined by Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, Senior Rabbinic Coordinator with the OU and the Rav of the Manastricha Beis Medrash in Flatbush. Thank you, Rabbi Rabinowitz.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, it's an honor to have someone who's an expert, who's been involved in Kashrus for many years, and you have many areas of expertise, but perhaps foremost is the area of wine, which is what I would say you specialize in. So we'd like to use the few minutes that we have here today with you to talk about wine, and to start with a very common topic, and that is that we find people using two halachic terminologies interchangeably, and they're really two different things. One is yayin esach, and one is stam yenam. So walk us through, what is the difference between the two, and why do you think people get mixed up?
Excellent question, and in fact, I think there is some confusion. So we'll try to elucidate a little bit. So yayin esach means wine that was used in worship of Avodah Zarah, used in idolatrous practice. This is a biblically forbidden substance. In ancient times, pagan worship involved using wine in the worship of idols. Anything which is used in the worship of idols is forbidden min haTorah. It's biblically forbidden because anything that is an Avodah Zarah, or anything which is used in the worship of Avodah Zarah, is forbidden. So that's something which is the traditional, the ancient term, and that is nothing new about that. That's the original term. Stam yayin means nondescript. It means wine which is not identified. It was not used in that practice. However, Chazal rabbinically forbade consuming, and perhaps not just consuming, but even benefiting from wine which was from non-Jews. Why was that? That was because wine is used for fraternization. People become intimate when drinking wine socially, and ultimately that can lead to intermarriage.
So it's a gzeirah of chasnus, just like the gzeirah of bishulakum and pasakum, which are also chasnus, right?
Correct. But sometimes people think the two are not related. What does idolatry and what does intermarriage, what do they have to do with each other? But actually, there is a very close connection. When Klal Yisrael were entering into Eretz Yisrael, right before they crossed the Yarden, so they were in a place called Midian, and Bilam, who was the evil prophet, he tried to seduce the Jewish men to fraternize with the Midianite women, and also to worship the idols, because that's what goes hand in hand. When people marry together, they worship together. When they worship together, they marry together. Mm-hmm. So the two are not unrelated. In fact, there's a medrash that says that's when Pinchas established this takana, this gzeirah of Chazal. It wasn't something that was accepted at that point in time, but he introduced this concept of stam yayin even then.
So today, do we find real yayin esach? Is that something that's extant?
I think for the most part, Paiskim have come to the conclusion that if it is found, it is very rare. Mm-hmm. The whole concept of idol worship, there's a concept that's said that minhag aviseihem biyodeihem. We say that what they're doing is perhaps, and there is a wine which is used in libation,
in
the Catholic Church, in other services, but it's not as if they're actually worshiping Avodah Zarah. These are, you know, obviously broader questions in terms of how we define Avodah Zarah in other religious practices. But for the most part, I think Poskim have concluded that what we have today is stam yayin. And certainly, where you're not aware that it was used in such a worship, we would consider that stam yayin.
So you would agree that most of the time today, when you hear people throw around the term yayin esach, what they really mean is stam yayin or stam yenam. Right,
Correct. There are some actually differences in halacha.
I was going to ask, what is the practical difference today?
For the most part, the Shulchan Aruch says that stam yayin is very similar to yayin esach in that they're both forbidden to consume and to benefit from. So you couldn't gift it to somebody. You couldn't sell it to somebody. However, the practice amongst Ashkenazim, because of the Ramah, is that we can benefit from it under certain circumstances because it isn't the same level, the same prohibition as was the original.
Now, many kosher restaurants across the country and beyond are very careful to only have Mavushal wines in their facility because of the a large number of waiters and other people are coming in and handling the wines and things like that. Two questions. Number one, if I go to a restaurant, do I have to be concerned regarding wines? And if yes, you know, what to look out for? And domestically at home, do people have to, especially if they have, you know, cleaning help and things like that, people coming in and out, do they have to make sure that any wine that they bring into their house is only Mavushal?
So in Israel, interestingly, Mavushal never really took off. And the reason is because these two great poiskim were against the concept.
Which two poiskim?
That's Rav Yashiv and Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbam. So those two didn't want to accept Mavushal. And as a result, I don't know, exclusively for that reason, maybe there's a certain stigma that's associated with Mavushal as being somehow inferior. So it never,
most wines in Israel are not Mavushal?
No.
Some
of the wines that are sold, the Israeli wines exported to America, those are Mavushal for the U.S. market.
Wow.
Or for the diaspora market. But what's sold in Israel is usually not Mavushal. And as a result, and I'm sure it's more complicated because in Israeli hotels and in Israeli restaurants, they also have non-Jewish help.
Right.
But they have designated individuals who are in charge of pouring. It's a little more complicated, but here in the United States, I think all the reputable hashgacha have decided that it's just not worth the hassle. It's not worth the risks that are involved. I know many times you go to a kiddush and someone says, I'm going to bring a bottle of non-Mavushal and I'm going to watch it. But, you know, when you're busy taking mazel tovs from people and busy greeting others, it's very hard to really watch over, and waiters are always circulating. So it is a hard thing to do. So in a restaurant, in a catering situation, it's really best advised to mm-hmm. avoid. And I think most of the hashkachas will insist on that. They won't allow.
Sure. I've been at an event on Shabbos where someone related to the Simcha brought his own bottle of non-Mavushal wine, and the Mashgiach came out, and he said, I'm not going to continue to supervise this event if that bottle is here. I insist that you take it out, because you don't want to take any chance of the Gentile help, you know, touching it or some other issue will come up. You didn't want to have to deal with that.
Right.
So getting back, continuing the question regarding domestic help, what should people be aware of at home?
Okay, I think domestic help is a broader discussion because like we started our conversation with the idea of intimacy of non-Jews in our lives. It manifests itself in many ways when we have so much help and people involved with our families on an intimate level. That said, if one has non-Jews, it's probably also best to avoid, unless you open a bottle and finish the bottle at the table, which is, you know, obviously you could, I guess, monitor that in your own home. But if you commonly don't finish the bottle and you have a bottle which you want to store away, unless you have a closed closet or something which you can lock it away, and the halacha would be probably, it would be preferable to avoid having non-Mavushal. That said, in the event that you have non-Mavushal and the wine was left unattended, so there are, under certain circumstances, there are leniencies. If the non-Jew did not have permission to use or to pour the wine or to open the bottle,
mm-hmm.
There are leniencies when Jews are circulating and the non-Jew would not want to be found to have touched or moved or drank in the wine.
Right.
So that's something that can be relied on in a post facto, in a vidyevid situation.
Now, but could you put the bottle of wine, let's say, in a bag or a double bag? Are there ways to get around it?
If one, for example, they even sell these combination lock stoppers.
Really?
Because some people buy very expensive bottles. And it's not just an issue of kashrus. They don't want their $300-$400 bottle of wine to be touched by anybody.
Uh-huh.
So there are for sale such items. How effectively they work, I don't know. That's one option. Someone can have a locked cabinet.
Uh-huh.
Someone could have, like you said, or put tape around it, or make
a chaisim.
Right, you can make a chaisim. I mean, actually, yain she'enu mavushal requires two chaisamais. So again, the label itself and the nature of the bottle is the first chosen, but you would need something on top that would not easily be opened and reclosed without detection.
Right. Now, am I correct that typically, especially here in America, the narrow bottles of wine are generally mevushel, whereas the bigger bottles of wine are not? I don't remember why I'm under that impression.
The Kedem Company, which is obviously one of the biggest manufacturers, their policy has been with the Kedem branded products that the large bottles, which are typically used in a home situation, the 1.5 liter bottle or even the 3 liter bottles, are typically non-mevushel unless otherwise noted. Mm-hmm. And the narrow bottles, the 750s, if you will, the milliliter, right, those are mevushel unless otherwise noted. So that's the general rule of how they...
With regard to Kedem, but with regard to other manufacturers, Lav Dafka, you'd have to take a look at it.
We certainly encourage every OU company to write clearly mevushel or non-mevushel. In Israel, it's harder. They usually will write mevushel on those which are. They may or may not write eina mevushel or non-mevushel on the non-mevushel. It's actually another interesting halacha, which is there are some leniencies for stam yeinim, but there's one very interesting very strict stringency, and that is if a person were to take non-mevushel wine and he were to pour it into, let's say, a non-Jew was with a cup, and he would pour the wine, so not just what goes into the non-Jew's cup would be prohibited, even the wine that remains in the bottle, it's a concept called nitzik chibur. Anything which is attached to the wine,
the stream of wine,
becomes prohibited. So sometimes you have a situation where you have wine tastings, and we can't govern who comes to a wine tasting. So, and if there's non-mevushel wine, what's recommended is that obviously the people serving the wine, they stand behind a counter where the attendees do not have access. They pour, but only pour into clean glasses. Because if they were to pour, if someone had left over some remaining wine and they poured into that cup, what's in the bottle would also become prohibited.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah. Thank you for this wonderful conversation, which is extremely instructive, and you gave us a wonderful background into wine and grape juice.
This is a real schuss for me to be able to, you know, to provide. Well, we work with kashrus all the time, and to be able to share some of what we do and the experiences that we have is really just a pleasure.
Thank you so much.